This episode of Forging Flame is brought to you by Onnit, the total human optimization website. You can go to onnit.com right now and enter the code FORGINGFLAME at checkout for 10% off any of your dietary supplement purchases. You can also check out a free trial for their three primary supplement products. They've got Alpha Brain for nootropics, ShroomTech Sport for fitness and recovery, and New Mood for your mental well-being. Not only do they have a host of great supplements, but they've also got just about anything you could possibly need for your health or fitness journey. They've got resources for training, they've got certifications, and a ton of great workout equipment. Again, Forging Flame at checkout, 10% off. It's awesome. Do it.
Do it. Welcome to Forging Flame. In this podcast, we have discussions with creative people of all types, entrepreneurs, artists, painters, sculptors, and today we have a very special guest named Joey Edwards. My name is Ryan Selleck.
And I am Nick Hinton.
And we were really excited to have Joey on today because he's just such a magnificent, multi-talented artist, but he so clearly has such a good time with everything he does, and that came across so well in our conversation.
Oh, man. And what a delight this guy was. Yeah. Joey, I love that we record these intros after the podcast because the insight is so great. Joey was a breath of fresh air for someone who makes art that for some could be so perturbing in so many fun and delightful ways. He himself is a delight of a human being, full of joy, full of energy, and I'm thrilled we got the chance to talk to him.
Yeah, I think perturbing is a very light way to put it. It's just some of the stuff he makes. I mean, I really enjoy really dark art myself, and I have a very dark sense of humor myself. So I see it, I'm like, that's nice. But I can see how somebody might see his artwork and need to go take a bath, you know, like, and maybe need to go, get baptized or something.
Something, yeah.
Something, some kind of spiritual cleansing, you know. Just very creepy, unsettling stuff, but it was so interesting. Like, I keep coming back to how well Nick interprets works of art, not necessarily from the artist's perspective. He's not necessarily trying to hit a bullseye on what exactly they're trying to say, but he's really good at picking apart at what it makes him feel, and it really... And the thing he said was, what was it that you said specifically?
I said something to the effect of, it seems like he takes delight in frolicking in the shadows.
Yeah. And I definitely agreed with that because there's definitely a playful element to it if you can, sit still long enough to observe it. But then we were looking through his portfolio at website, edwardsartanddesign.com. Is that correct?
Yep, that's okay, right.
If I'm wrong on that, forgive me.
Check the show notes. Don't complain.
Don't complain. This is free. So we visited his website, just kind of doing a little bit of background research on him, and that is to the T just about exactly how he described himself. He used the word spooky and kooky, and that's like, yep. That's
enough said.
So how do you feel about the conversation we just had with Joey? What are your big takeaways here?
My big takeaways is that Joey Edwards, in the history books, Joey Edwards will be one of those who was ultimately responsible for saving the world through embracing inner darkness gleefully and without judgment.
That's a pretty solid statement right there. I think we'll just leave it right there and just go right into it. So here you go, ladies and gentlemen, and theys and thems and everybody in between.
That's right.
Here is our podcast with Joey Edwards.
Mmm, tasty.
So today on Forging Flame, we have Joey Edwards. Joey Edwards is...
Welcome, Joey.
Yeah, welcome, Joey. How are you today, buddy?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, it's we're really excited to have you.
I've been looking forward to this for the last, like, 3 weeks, so...
Awesome.
Yeah.
Woo!
Super psyched. Cool.
So Nick Hinton's like pretty good at by the way, yeah, this is my good buddy. Oh, Nick Hinton.
I'm Nick Hinton.
Yeah.
Hey, pleasure to meet you, Joey.
So
I've been listening to your podcast, man. I'm really impressed with what you guys are doing. This is outstanding, man. Really cool to be here. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to be on your guys' platform. This is so cool.
Oh, dude, thank you for agreeing to be on here. This is awesome, man.
Hell yeah.
Our mutual friend Jessica Heckel actually recommended you, but not before I already had you on the list of artists that I was going to potentially ask, you know, to be on the podcast. So, it all just worked out. Joey's excited to be here. We're excited to have him. But I just wanted to lead in a little bit. Nick has a really good way of describing how art makes him feel, how basically the vibe that he gets from art. He's really good at breaking it down into words that really just kind of makes sense. I don't know. When I look at pieces of art, I tend to think of it overly analytically. I tend to break it up left brain. He's really good with like the right brain aspect of it. And when we were looked through your entire Instagram, even back to your like old paintings. He said that it seemed like you were playing in shadows.
Yeah, it's like I think at one point I said that you were taking delight in frolicking in shadow. and because when I was looking through, Ryan was more familiar with your work, obviously, than I was, not having that common link with Jessica. So a couple of weeks ago, he said, hey, we're going to interview Joey Edwards. Here's all of his social media. Take a look at some of his art and let me know what you think. And I was just immediately delighted with just how playful, and spooky everything is. And I mean, you know, I don't want to bury the lead. I want to have you, you know, kind of describe what it is exactly that you do. But it looks like you're one of your biggest mediums, your biggest chosen mediums, which we can actually see in the back of the frame there. I can't find a better word than delightful. Because it is, it's absolutely that the nostalgia, the whimsy, you know, all that childhood stuff that just kind of makes us feel less shitty overall. Like that's it right there. So Joey, in your own words, what is it that you do?
Oh man. I guess, my branding, man, weird, wonderful things. I don't know. I make stuff. I do what I want. Run with 10 gangs.
Awesome.
Old South Park quote. I've been doing artwork my whole life. When I was a little kid, I didn't think of it as art. I just made my own toys. Family didn't come from like a whole bunch of money. And so I started, I remember my friends had cool little X-Men toys. And so I'd make like little paper dolls. And then right around the same time, I was making little wire creatures, and I was playing with those, and I'd make tinfoil people, and the wire people would, like, impale those and tear them apart and dismember them. And I would get heavily involved in modeling clay and, like, ruin my mother's floors, like, in their carpet. And, there's a heavy sense of play that I think comes through in the end, but it's all a little spooky, a little creepy, but, I like doing spooky things, and I like that vibe, and I'm still doing it. So many stories.
Awesome. Yeah. For our listeners that aren't aware of Joey Edwards yet, he does a lot of these really creepy wireframe sculptures seem to have a lot of like really depth and like texture and some of them. Some of them are pretty unsettling, and I love it. I love how unsettling they are, especially like there was one that we found. I think it was a little far down the line. Mm-hmm. It looked like a centipede skeleton, God. And it just like gave us both like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that was a two-headed, like 7-foot-long snake skeleton.
Yeah,
7-foot-long. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
it looks horrifying. You're talking about
the branch, right?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
the big coiled, like my first, before I realized what it was, that was the first place my brain went, was like giant, like millipede type creature, you know, which brings up a whole lot of weird shit for me. Like, I'm okay with most insects. Those are the ones that really like give me pause. And so that's what I thought at first. And then I saw that it was like the snake skeleton, and I was much more okay with it at that point, personally.
But, I think you didn't see the 9-foot tall millipede painting I painted with the angelic wings coming out of its back.
Definitely didn't. No.
Oh, wow. We must have missed that one. Uh-oh.
Against my better judgment, I'll definitely go and dig that up.
It's a thing. So
I couldn't resist, just because I'm a father. I've got 3 daughters, and I was just like, I spent probably way too much time digging into your social media and your website and just all this stuff, just like trying to consume as much of the art that you've created as I could. And I had to share it with my girls because I knew that they would be on board, and they lost their collective shit when they saw your pumpkins. How long have you been doing that?
Oh man, since I was a little kid, man. I don't know, like I remember back when I was like under 10 years old and watching Roseanne. Oh. And and then during like the credits, they would always have those portrait pumpkins. Mm-hmm. Like it would be cutouts, but then sometimes it would blow your mind by like shaving off like a part of the lip. So that, because like with a traditional cutout pumpkin, you can't have any free floating black. Like that's the rule. That defies gravity. So if you're going to do cutouts and you're going to do some kind of wavy portrait with like cutting out like the shading and then leaving holes for like all the highlights and stuff like that, none of that can just be suspended in there. Unless you use like toothpicks, but that doesn't work very well. That's really cheesy. And so I remember they did this, like, hey, God, I don't think it was John Travolta, but it looked like John Travolta went to my little kid brain. They like cut off part of the lip, like just took off the skin and gave that like 3D shading a bit. Mm. And that allowed them to have the black suspended in air around it. But I don't know. When I was a little kid, I thought that was the coolest thing. And I always was spooky. I always love Halloween. And so like combining like art and the spooky Halloween pumpkins have always been like the perfect like coalescence and confluence of those two vibes. And I've been carving like crazy pumpkins since I was a little kid. I don't think they got any good until I was an adult, but
sure.
But yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, well, just so people know, and hopefully, especially, you know, by sharing this, they go out and find your stuff online. But like, we're talking photorealistic, like perfectly shaded and articulated, like the Frankenstein's monster is mind blowing. Even the one with the witch with like the cats, the level of detail in the moon. And then the fact that there are so many more cats than what you originally like, you know, take in. Just blows me away. It's amazing. Oh,
that's like my favorite one too. Like I carved that for the Eugene Weekly. Like they had like this is really stupid, but they had a so Eugene Weekly had a pumpkin carving contest where like it's like, oh, carve a pumpkin, we'll put it on the cover, and whoever gets the best pumpkin will win. So like I entered it one year, and it was 2000. I guess it would have been 2016, whatever year the last election was, like the actual election. And so I did a zombie Donald Trump. Like, I don't know. But like, and it was back when I wasn't doing the shading work. I was just doing like a cutout. So I made a stencil. I turned him into a zombie and I called it Donald Trumpkin, and I entered that and it won. And that was cool. And then the following year they had the pumpkin contest again and I carved that pumpkin. And so I did that in a night. I wasn't sure how it would turn out, but I'm really, really happy with the way it turned out. Cause it was right after I started carving, like by doing the shading technique. Mm-hmm. And where you take off like layers of the skin, and the deeper you go, like it brings out more light. So it's like kind of like painting with light. And so I got to spend so little time with that pumpkin physically before I carved it and then handed it off to them. But I won. And then they put this little stupid caption on the bottom. It's like, Joey Edwards wins. again. And they never had the contest again.
Yeah, I was going to ask, at what point do you just, you know, consciously bow out because it stops being fun knowing that you're going to walk right through everyone else that's...
I'm awful. I just try to do better, man. I wish there was more contests and things like that to do. It's such an obscure art form. Like, what kind of silly niche have I found myself in?
but it's the type of thing that hits with just about everybody, though. Like, everyone, for the most part, at least, you know, in the States, I guess not if you're a Jehovah's Witness, but I mean, if you celebrate Halloween in any capacity, you see that level of detail and artistry in a pumpkin carving, and you're just immediately gonna you know, fall in love, or at least fall back into your own childhood for a split second, you know, and kind of revel in it. If you're anything like me, at least, but no. Yeah,
but I get off of it, so for sure.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and I started to ask before we hit record here, foolishly, yeah. But you've got so many of them, and I can see some in the background there. I assume you didn't just carve those this morning, right?
No, not at all. So I think it was around maybe 2011. There was an evolution in Halloween science that now foam pumpkins became a thing.
So
at Michael's, you can buy craft foam pumpkins. They have their own brand. Like, they have their own exclusive deal with these certain types of pumpkins. I don't carve on those consistently anymore. What I carve on now is called Funkins. But they're kind of both the same thing. They're two different brands. They have different consistencies, different pros and cons between the models. But the beauty of them is that, like, for all the hours and hours and hours of work, like that witch with the holding the cat with all the eyeballs, mm-hmm. like that probably took me, I don't know, between like 6 and 7 hours to carve out.
Wow.
And I did another real pumpkin like a year or two later. That was the Ninkasi pumpkin. I don't know if you saw that at all, but that one took like 12 hours. It was for a contest that they had where, sorry, I'm so over the place with this, but
that's all good place for it.
They and Ninkasi Brewery had a cool contest for Halloween where they were doing two contests. You could do a pumpkin carving, and they provided you with a number of like pumpkin stencils and stuff like that you can carve for their logo and things like that. And then they also had like a coloring sheet, and the coloring sheet was based off of their beer, the Dawn of the Red. Just kind of like has this kind of Walking Dead vibe, like zombies, survivors against the zombie, but in the Willamette Valley. So it's like right there next to the bridges that are through Eugene, but zombies are coming out of the river and stuff. And so I just took the coloring sheet and carved it on the pumpkin.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, 2 birds, 1 stone. Hell yeah. It took me like 12 hours, man, but it was a real pumpkin. And it, you know, all that work, it just rots and goes away. And so, It's cool to have a foam pumpkin because then you can treat it as art and it allows it to live as long as you take care of it. So
sure.
With the foam pumpkins, I carve them with a Dremel. I can light them safely all year long with an LED light in them, just keeping them lit the whole time because it puts off very, very low heat. And I made little coffin wall mounts so that I can have art shows of my pumpkins during Halloween time, which has been pretty rad. I did that for the first.
Oh, I saw those.
But so it's cool. That way you can have these up for longer. They're not just on your porch. They can be shared, and just a fun experience, I guess.
Well, and one more quick point before I stop just totally commandeering this entire show, but I do think that there's something to say for the transient nature of the. Live flesh pumpkin, in that it's almost like a spooky modern mandala, right? Like, you know, it's in nature just very quickly wipes it away. Only to start fresh next season.
I absolutely still carve like normal like flesh pumpkins every year. You can't not do that, but
you gotta get your hands mucky.
When I first started carving like the foam pumpkins, because I don't know, like I put a lot of effort into these things, and it's cool that some of them get like attention. And so like at least my porch would get attention on Halloween.
Sure.
I just moved from Eugene, Oregon to Beaverton, Oregon, which is just to the east the west of Portland. So, but I had been at my old house for about 13 to 15 years, somewhere in that range. And my porch on Halloween had got quite the reputation, which is cool because like families, I get feedback from families saying that like they would come from across town just to trick or treat in my neighborhood to like check out the pumpkins this year. And it was, I don't know, Friendly Street was a cool place to live and it had a good vibe to it. But the first year I started, I realized I could do foam pumpkins. I like, okay, cool. I'll just take the designs I would normally do on like normal flush pumpkins or organic pumpkins and do them on these foam pumpkins and they'll last forever. And like, yay, that's so cool. And freaking people weren't happy about it. Like, they did not like it. They like,
sell out.
A lot of people dismissed it like immediately. They thought that I bought them at a store. And I remember I had carved three pumpkins. I had carved Gomez and Morticia Adams on their own separate portraits. And they were up on my porch. And then I also carved Bellatrix Lestrange from Harry Potter. Mm. And I had her down at the bottom of my steps. And the way that my porch worked, it's like a solid wall and had a little enclosure, like a little square area where my door was. And so like that would just kind of get packed with trick-or-treaters because we get a couple hundred trick-or-treaters every year. And so I opened my door and then I had to fight back the trick-or-treaters, but I couldn't get to the steps that led to that door. And I remember very, very clearly there was this one dude and he was dressed as a punk rocker and he was just like an adult. He was with his kids, but he was really drunk. And he had let his kid come up to my door and I was giving the kid candy with like a group of other kids. So I had this wall of children in front of me. And he kind of stumbled over and he like looks down at the bottom of my stairs and he's like, whoa, whoa. And he goes up and he like touches it and he realized it was like, you know, a pumpkin or like a foam pumpkin. He's like, what? He's like, he just straight up said, these are faker pumpkins. And then he kicked it in.
What an asshole.
Like 4 hours worth of work into that. And he just put his boot right through it. And then like, he just like stumbled off with his family, like to have a happy Halloween. And
wow. It's like,
what? And it took me a while to even get back out there because I don't know, just all the traffic, kids and stuff. But I don't know, man. So ouch. I went back to doing regular pumpkins for a long time. And then I finally decided in 2016 that I wanted to get better at pumpkin carving. It's something that meant a lot to me. I'd spent a long time outside of the world of art and I wanted to get back into it. And it was the one thing that like always made me feel good making stuff that I liked. And so I got a hold of, Ninkasi let me do an art show there. And so I did my first art show with pumpkins and that was cool. And I went, That was that.
It's awesome, man. It's really, really cool. And also that guy deserved like a hardcore ass whooping. Dude, like,
for sure.
Oh my God. At least he was in character though, right?
Definitely the first forging flame fuck you goes out to that guy.
Yeah. Fuck that guy. It's official.
Hey, just to let you know, Joey, when we're talking and you start talking, sometimes you cut out. So if we're talking over you, we're not being jerks. So sorry. Yeah.
Apologies.
I'm good.
But one of the things that we kind of touched on a little bit was sort of the transient nature of those natural pumpkins and carving those. Have you ever had a pumpkin that looked cooler after it started rotting? Like,
oh, nice.
One of the things that comes to mind for me, I'll share my quick experience, is I did one of those like templated things of Jack Skellington, and it was cool and it turned out really well. It was a toothpick thing, you know, and you carve it out that way and then carve it with a little serrated like blade thing that they have in
the
there.
Little orange handled saw.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Actually, my surface that I'm recording myself on now is sitting in a box full of those.
So,
very familiar with fun. Yeah.
So I carved Jack Skellington and it looked great, but man, like when it started rotting 3 weeks later, like well into September, that thing was fucking creepy. I loved it after that, at that point. Like I wished I could have preserved its rotting state. So was there anything like that you've experienced with some of your all natural pumpkins?
Yeah, I mean, I sell them short, like with so I, in traditionally for Halloween, like I, if I have a pumpkin art show, I do all of those throughout the summer, and they're all foam pumpkins. And September is like the last bit of like my busting my ass to make sure they're all done for that kind of show. And then October comes and all those are up, and it's like, oh, what do I do now? So then I start carving real pumpkins and finish up whatever else I want to work on. But yeah, I typically end up having like my organic pumpkins from my porch out, and I carve them like the week of Halloween. So they're still pretty fresh and cut. So like the trick-or-treaters and stuff like that, they don't get to see like the rotten faces, but then I continue to keep them up for like weeks. Like let them like slowly go, like get a little spooky. It's good. And it's, I don't give some of my carves that are like the shading carves credit enough, because they hold up a lot longer than like when you do full cutouts.
Makes sense.
It gets kind of like a Steve Buscemi vibe after a little while. So.
Well weathered. It's a look that sells.
It's good. I need to carve a Buscemi pumpkin. Someone recommended that.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm into that.
So we tend to focus on the creative process here. So what does the process look like with creating these different pumpkins, whether it's a foam pumpkin or a real one? Where does that kind of start? Do you kind of get a bit of inspiration? Do you start with an image? Do you draw a lot of these things? Like how do these come about?
So like a long time when I first started, because I originally, like my design of how I did my pumpkins has evolved considerably over time, but I think it's evolved in a good way. When I was a kid, what I would do is like whatever I was passionate about, if it was a movie or it was music, like I have carved so many Trent Reznor pumpkins, like like one after another, and like Jason or different horror movies and things like that. And what I would do is, and there's a lot of Harry Potter ones too, but I would take a person that I like, because I love doing portrait art. It's just one of the things I really enjoy doing. And I would print out a photocopy, or I would print out an image, but then I would photocopy it so it would be all grainy and distorted. And then what I would do is I would take a Sharpie and white out, and then I would start making like a stencil cutout based off of what I'd see there. And so then I gradually turn like the grayscale that I would get from like the photocopy into like a graphic design. And then I'd photocopy it again, tweak again, until I would finally settle on a cool graphic image that I wanted to do. And nice. So that was how I was growing up all of my pumpkins. And it's got it more and more in depth as I went. And kind of like, or as long as you have the rule, no free floating black, I mean, you're good. That way the gravity can support the carve. And then you can put like a little, like say if like you have like someone's forehead and they have like stringy hair, their eyebrows and their eyes are going to be like a heavy area on the pumpkin. But if you can have like a little strand of hair come down and connect to that, then you have a branch there that'll hold that eye in place with that kind of carve, like kind of like a jack-o'-lantern, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
But structurally.
It's a weird cross-section of like architectural engineering and artistry in a purely visual form. Crazy.
I mean, think of how much strength a little strand of pumpkin can actually hold up overall. If you have it supported here, but down here it's like just a little tiny strand, here it'll carry most of the weight, but like if you don't have that whole thing's gonna go real sideways as it starts to carry it real quick. But yeah, just all those little funny design things. I would just do my best and try to make these cool images, and they got tighter and tighter over the years. When I first did my first pumpkin show, I did it all in that style. But then what I started experiencing was, it was funny, because like they say imitation is like the most sincerest form of flattery, right? But because I'm doing these graphic images, what I started to see was people just like screenshotting my pumpkins and my designs and then carving them on their own without my permission. Like these designs that like I've spent hours and hours and hours and hours perfecting, all of a sudden people are claiming as their own artwork and things like that. And I just felt really weird about it. I didn't feel terrible about it, but I was like, well, you know what you can't? This screenshot carve is if I do shaded now. I'm going to try this. And I used, it's funny because like before I did that, I always looked at like pumpkins that had shading as like cheating. Like because they had, they were like, oh, you don't have any free floating black. You can't do that. That's such a weird limitation you put on yourself.
Right.
Like you're like, oh, I made rules for myself that are arbitrary and I have to follow these now. But I don't know. So finally at the end of 2016, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and try to do the shading thing. And I tried it a little bit and I did this picture that I found on Reddit. It wasn't even like a celebrity thing. It was just this really, really interesting looking woman that was coming out of like a pool of water. And I still went all the way through the pumpkin to get the brightest lights because that's all I knew at the time. And I just carved her and I remember I got to the lips and I don't know, it's kind of like people that work with palette knives and paintings, how, and like people that do abstraction style stuff where they'll just be like, whoop, 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 and like, someone else will look at it and be like, oh my God, that's the coolest fucking thing ever. What, how did you do that? It's like, I don't know. I don't know. Like the way I carved her lips triggered something in the back of my head that just, that I don't know. It was weird. It looked more real to me as an inverted painting by carving in to create light than anything else I've ever done that captured like this sense of realism that I never got before. That like was like, oh, bling, what is that? And then from there, all I did was try to like do like this shading pumpkin from there on out and like just figure it out.
I don't know if that
makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the way that I never would have imagined, even coming into this conversation, I never would have imagined, because that, like, you just took me to a place. I keep smacking my fucking mic stand.
That's all right. just ignore it.
That's all right. The way that you shared that memory of carving the lips and how deep I was just sucked into that story just like blew me away. And it's always amazing to me how something that seems so innocuous, right? Like pumpkin carving, every child, you know, from the age of like 4 years old, you know, a good 80% of them in this country have carved a pumpkin, right? Like,
yeah,
it's a thing that everyone knows and loves. And you don't really think of it as being a pure art form, right? It's just kind of a campy, cheeky thing to do. But when you're like using negative space in such a way to like bring something very visually to life, and it's causing this sort of like this switch flip in, you know, in your own, not just, you know, your mind, but really, I guess your overall, it's like you leveled up as an artist, right? Like every time one of those switches gets flipped, just like in Brazilian jiu-jitsu or learning a language, like there's just a moment where something kind of clicks and then you're just kind of at this other plane at that point. And that's amazing to hear that from something so humble as a beautiful orange pumpkin, you can have such a profound experience as an artist. And that's beautiful. And I thank you very deeply for sharing that. It's awesome.
It's just a trip. It's like one of the things that I think drives me consistently as an artist is like, how can I say this? I heard it described once as like, an artist looks at a lot of artwork, right?
Sure.
And so they're exposed to a lot of artwork. They look at other people's artwork, but most of all, because they're an artist and they make artwork, they look at their own artwork all the time. And so for someone to come up and be like, oh, wow, that's really cool, man, I like what you did. For someone who's seen it like 50,000 times, like they don't get that same vibe, you know, like, oh, I see everything I did wrong with it, or I see these things that I fall short on that, or I only look at the things that, you know, I'm disappointed in. But every now and then, there's like something that either on accident or you do on purpose and it pays off, but something just clicks. And all of a sudden it just fills you with this energy. And it's like, oh my God, that is fucking cool. That is, I'm actually very pleased with this. And that's a subtle way of saying it, but like, it just inspires you to like, want to keep carving and doing more and like, whatever it is. It's like, I don't know. It's, I feel that when I'm able to do something to my expectations and like get a little bit above there and be like, fuck yeah. I don't know, man. I've experienced that in a few other medias too, like with my wire work from time to time, but it's a cool feeling to like your own work. And yeah, it's not coming from like a place where like I'm full of myself or anything like that. Cause I am not. I'm very self-deprecating, but when that comes through the surface there and something just looks like, hey, that doesn't look like a carving anymore. That doesn't look like just a piece of, I don't know. It's like when something's this more than the sum of its parts.
Right.
It's like, wow, that's interesting. What is that?
And I experience the same thing with music all the time. The happy accidents, like accidentally creating a different sound. It's just like, well, that doesn't even sound like a guitar. I'm keeping that. That's cool. And the constant just tinkering. And yeah, you definitely did not come across as full of yourself with that. I mean, you came across as like the same way that I would when I do actually like some of my own music or my own artwork. And it's just kind of, it's almost baffling, you know, when you hit that point, you're just like, what? I actually made something that I enjoy, that I like showing off. And even the way that you described the way that you experience your own art, I think that's a really common thread in artwork as well, is that we're so that we're so immersed in our own works that we tend to notice all the flaws, all the little things wrong with it. And somebody listens to it and they're like, man, that sounds great. And I'm like, yeah, the bass is kind of fucked up and the limiter is not there. And like, yeah, that's a little harsh right here. And like, I have to stop myself sometimes when I'm sharing music with people from putting it in that context,
like poisoning their expectations.
Exactly. You know, showing it to them is like, okay, here it is, but the compressor's all fucked up and like it's just a scratch track and it's not that good. You know, I have to reel that back in sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, that's cool to definitely to hit those points. And I like the way you described carving her lips and how it was just kind of this haphazard thing and it just like sparked something, you know. And I think all artists to some degree experience a little bit of that, and that's where the magic is, I think.
Oh yeah. I myself, and I just to give you a little background, Joey, professionally I'm the back of house manager for a local craft distillery tasting room. And so I generate new ingredients. There's a lot of experimentation that goes on, like putting different flavors together. But it's the same thing, whether it's making ingredients that are going to wind up in cocktails or making music or carving pumpkins with a new technique that you're not super comfortable with and like nailing it. It's those moments of like pure manifestation where it's like you have an idea and you're like, I feel like this is going to work, but then you always kind of have a little bit of self-doubt, right? Yep. But then you just ignore that shit and do the thing. And as long as you don't like fixate on anything and you just do it from exactly like that mental place of where the idea lies and comes from. For me, it was a simple syrup with banana, papaya, and clove. That is way sexier in your mouth hole than it actually sounds like just spoken aloud. But, you know, hitting the flavors that I thought were going to work and actually being far more blown away with how the end result came out, despite any of my own like preconceived notion that I was going to have to, you know, do a lot of tweaking to get to the place that I liked. You know, self-validation is the sweetest validation. We'll leave it there.
You know,
oh, yeah, man.
Especially with art, when you don't get a whole lot of that validation in the real world. You're kind of crawling uphill as far as that goes. I feel like artists, by and large, are very undervalued in our society and underutilized and underappreciated and under just about every. We're the underdogs, man. So those.
I'm sure you saw that little blip that came out like right around the COVID hit, where it's like, oh, here's the top five most valued jobs according to Americans and the most top five useless jobs. And it was an infographic, and like the top useless job was artist. I can't imagine like what like the guy who had designed that is going through his head. Idiots. Is made up by someone who was creative at some point.
Yeah. Everything in our culture, it all comes down to the arts. Everything from packaging to, you know, I mean, every, you know, even capitalism, like advertising, video develop, every single thing, like anything I look at has some degree of creativity. It just baffles me that, that it is so underutilized. And I think it just really comes from, people exploring their own creative voices, and sometimes it's a bit difficult to find audiences for those. You know, it's been a constant struggle for me, at least as an artist, because you know you're pouring your heart and soul into this thing, and you're sacrificing so much. You have no social life, you know, no relationship. You're constantly backing out of plans to stay home and do the thing, and you're living this reclusive, just torturous lifestyle, and then somebody's like, "Yeah, that's okay. That's all right."
Crestfallen.
Spend all this time alone to just be like an entertainment for somebody else.
Yeah. that kind of bugs me too. Thinking about it as entertainment, it's just like, what the fuck? Yeah. I'm amusing people? Am I a clown? Like, is that what I'm doing?
I'm going to talk to my friends all the way through your set, Ryan Selleck.
Right.
Hey, get me another beer while you're up. The music's too damn loud.
It's too loud. I can't hear myself.
Kill you to play a little fog hat.
Some Steely Dan.
Shit.
Oh boy. So you touched on the wire art. So that is completely different than pumpkins. That's a totally different. I imagine that's
spookier.
That is a lot spookier. I imagine that's a lot different of a process. And like I've done a little bit of wire work to know that. I don't like doing live wire work because my hands are kind of sensitive. So I'm like manipulate. I just don't have those like blacksmith.
All the plucking and everything like that's got to desensitize you a little bit.
Just right here. But the rest of them, man, I just got bitch hands. So they just like when I start trying to manipulate wire. In fact, my last experience with wire was setting up one of these pop filters here and not these ones. These ones are actually nice, but actually making one my own, like and trying to manipulate the wire of a wire hanger. And I accidentally picked a really thick one. And I had a hard time with that. So I can only imagine the hell that you go through to create like this creepy hand coming out of the wall. And
guys.
Nice. Yes.
One thing that people maybe don't get about like this kind of stuff is that it's meant to be played with. Like all of this stuff being wire. You can twist it and turn it and play with it. It's like sculpture that's not fixed. You can just like, I don't know, you can set it up in your apartment. I'm in the door.
Love it.
Have it on keys. And like, I paint these with like spray paint and acrylic paints and I coat them afterward. And so they can be like this neat, trippy thing, but like it's, you never can get bored of it because you can always twist and turn it. And so like, even after I finish a piece, like all I'd want to do is just keep playing with it. And so like this particular thing just ended up becoming like a weird arm that I've yet to figure out like what to do with. But it's just, I don't know, like I started making this stuff as a kid and like it's to me it's like super expressive. Like you just right in, do like these trippy fucking things. But I don't know, like I mean, the wire has been a life changing kind of thing for me as an artist. In 2017, I decided that I wanted to start selling my artwork at tattoo expos. And so I went to the Evergreen Tattoo Invitational, which is annually in Eugene. And I rented a booth space, which cost me like about $500. And it was like the most I ever spent on myself for promoting myself as an artist. And I'm trying to think of like how it all came together. But okay, so what it was is like all my life I made artwork. I made wire stuff. And I went away from it for a while. And I went away from being an artist as a while. And I went through a really, really difficult period of my life where I kind of had to like pick myself up and start from the beginning again and give myself a fresh start at who I wanted to be, what I was passionate about, and what, you know, what really mattered to me as a person. And so I wasn't sure what that was. And so I spent years in retail and like just killing myself, like working up to 70 hours a week. And I didn't have time for doing art anymore. I mean, I spent enough time in college to become a fucking doctor. And all I did was extend that by taking art classes and art classes. And maybe if I had like paid way more money and gone to an art school, that would have paid off somewhere. Maybe it's paying off in now ways now that I'm not giving enough credit for it. But out of college, I ended up just moving and working in retail to support my family at the time. And the family thing didn't work out. And so I had just to figure out what I was doing with my life again. And so I started to teach myself how to paint again. And I started doing that. And that led me to get really passionate about having pumpkin art shows. And then I started picking up the wire stuff again. And I was like, okay, I need pumpkins are cool. I really, really love them, but I want to do more than pumpkins. I'm more than just a pumpkin person. So I used to really like wire. So I picked it up again. And I was like, what do I want? And at the time, you know, I was really into spooky things like specimens, things like that, and like antlers and like really cool, like trippy, like taxidermy style stuff. And like, but what if I make taxidermy out of wire? What if I make a set of like horns? And so I just kind of whipped up with like baling wire is what I use. Mm-hmm. It's stuff that the rebar fences and stuff like that. I took baling wire. I made these antlers. And they were cool, but then I just got the idea to paint them, like dry brush them a little bit. And all of a sudden, dry brush just brought out all of this cool texture that was always wire, but it's so hard to capture wire on camera to share that with people until you see it in person. It's such a trip, but like it brought out all these highlights. So I could just brush right over the top of it. And so then I had like these cool antlers. And like, okay, that's cool. What other skulls can I make? And then I spent like a month and a half just wrecking my arms, making these crazy skulls. And like I started with like auroxes and like bucks and deers. I started researching the anatomy of all kinds of skulls, like how do I make elephant tusks, what's that look like? And I made like a huge elephant tusk piece, and then I had all these skulls. And so I'm like, well, what am I going to do with this? And my barber at the time was like, you know, we're doing Evergreen Brooklyn J over at the American Traditional down in Eugene. It's a very good place to get a haircut, just saying. they were a part of putting on the Evergreen Tattoo Expo. And so they encouraged me to go ahead and jump into that. And so I did. I got a booth pretty easily, which I'd never been into this environment before. And it was so scary. It was one of the scariest things in my life to just figure out, like, not only had I not like shared my art publicly, like, very frequently in a while, but to get into it like a vendor expo space and just figure out how to do it with all these other professionals. And you're there because the Evergreen Tattoo Expo or Evergreen Tattoo Invitational is such a magical place, because it's not just like your average tattoo expo. It's you have to be invited to come to it. You're surrounded by world-class artists from all over the world. I mean, that's what the world-class artist thing's about, right? And so it's just everyone there is like a phenomenal artist. And then I find myself there with this booth. It's like, what do I got to do? And so, well, I'm used to showing kind of on like walls and the galleries and things like that. So I built my own gallery walls. I engineered them so they fold up like a book and I can open them up. And I had these big 8 foot tall boards that were painted in like a gallery color wall. And I had this ossuary of all these skulls and hands because I needed something else at a lower price point. And I didn't sell any of the skull. I sold one skull, which was rad. And that person who bought that and becoming like, would come back every year and buy more and more of my stuff, which is awesome when someone invested in it. It's like, oh, I'm doing the right thing. I can keep doing this. And then you continue to evolve because you have this audience. But like all the hands sold, like every one of them.
Nice.
Cool. That's awesome. And the sale from the hands and that skull, like doubled my investment in the expo. Like it was such a high tier of like investment to even get in there. But then after putting in all that, like, all the money to get in there, boom, all of a sudden, I can put all that money toward another one. And so then I went from doing Evergreen to I did the Seattle Tattoo Expo. And that, I think that's the, I don't know if you came up to that one, Ryan, but that was right after that is when I did that one with Jessica. And then you guys came down and you played that show for the Equinox.
Yes, for the Eclipse, wasn't it? That was the Eclipse show. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Eclipse, yeah.
Yeah.
That was great. And then after that, I did the Portland Tattoo Expo. And I just, every year, just did more and more expos. And it was great because people would buy certain things and it inspired me to make more stuff. And just spiral out and, yeah.
I take back what I said earlier. Self-validation is sweet, but cash validation is much sweeter. paying the bills is pretty damn tasty.
I could definitely see why the wire artwork would go over really well at a tattoo expo. It just like looks like some cool shit to have in a tattoo shop. Just
100%.
Like, what the fuck is that? Like, oh, you hang your coat there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that...
The tattoo expos was that, like, you'd be surrounded by all these artists that were, everyone that's in a tattoo expo, and God, it is the coolest fucking experience to have your artwork for sale at a tattoo expo. Not just because, like, you're surrounded by so many other artists. So it's like you have this huge vibe of camaraderie that I never experienced. It's like having a second extended family where, like, doing these expos year after year since 2017, except people remember you and they make friends with you and they connect with you. It's like you just develop this cool fucking family of artists that I just didn't have before, which is awesome. But then everyone that goes to a tattoo expo, all the walk-ins, no, it's not like you put your stuff up at the fair or at like a Saturday market or stuff like that where people, I mean, kind of a Saturday market, I guess, but like, everyone that's there at a tattoo expo is there to drop fucking money investing on artists.
Right.
Which is so great. Like people come in there and they're like, okay, I'm going to drop like $2,000 today and I'm going to spend it on this tattoo. And I'm going to get these world-class artists to work on me, or just this artist that I really, really like that I followed for years. He's going to have this on me and I'm going to carry this with me forever. So it's like you have this vibe of these people that just want to invest in the artwork, invest in arts in general, not only like the artists themselves, but to show off their work forever on their bodies. And so, I mean, it's just so cool just to see all these people just really, really, really just into art and just willing to invest in you. And so people, I've got a lot of walk-ins, or not walk-ins, I guess, because I have an open booth, but people come up to me and they would buy some of my artwork there. And then I would get some really sizable sales from a lot of tattoo artists there who maybe had a good week or a good weekend at the tattoo expo, and it's coming to the end of the show and they're like, okay, man, I got all this cash on me. Let's buy some freaky shit. And so like, some of them will walk by my booth in the beginning. They'll be like eyeballing stuff, and then they'll come back later and haggle with me and come back again. And it's like, okay, cool. Here's a great big piece of artwork. Now I feel validated. I want to make more of these. And so thank you for investing in me and my dreams and like, the things that I want to do with my life. I all of a sudden feel like I have purpose. It's so cool. I did the tattoo expo scene consistently. Then I started to break out of it and do more oddities shows, like pop-ups. Like here in Portland, there's a really great one called Market Obscura. And it's like a very small scale kind of expo, but it's all for freaky stuff. And I've done pretty well there. And then I did the there's a national tour expo that goes around called the Oddities and Curiosities Expo. And they tour, they go to San Francisco, they go to Portland, they go to Denver, they go to Chicago. And I did them for the first time last October, and I had my single best day I've ever had. And from that show, I have met people that have invested in me even since then that basically have like made up for the loss of expos during COVID by like reaching out for commissions and then like, hey, what else you got? I want some more of your stuff.
It's amazing.
Fucking thank you, man. That's so cool. And so, yeah, I don't know. My artwork repertoire for the last couple of years has been kind of evenly split between pumpkins and then wire artwork. There's a bunch of other stuff I dabble in, but I don't know. Wire artwork is cool because I found myself in two weird niches. Sure. Like I have like a Halloween niche that is, it's makes me happy. Makes the little Joey inside of me very happy with Halloween and being able to like express my joy of creativity and spookiness in Halloween. And then I have like this wire stuff that I've never fucking seen before. I don't know what I've never seen anyone does work like I do, which is weird. Like you go into painting and there's a bunch of other painters to look up to. But with the direction that I've taken, just making spooky, weird skeleton creatures out of wire, there are other artists out there that are really good at making like taxidermy style artwork, but no one is making wire artwork the way that I am. And so it's like this weird frontier of a combination of crazy self-doubt, because it's like, I don't know if anyone's going to like this weird thing that never existed before. And then, you know, I don't know, but I kind of lost my train of thought there, but I like it. It's spooky. It's weird.
It's all good. Happens to us all the time.
I really appreciate like you pulling that arm out and like manipulating for us. Like and you made the point that it has a much better impact in person than it does, you know, on Instagram, for example. And I can imagine why, you know, being able to touch it, being able to manipulate it. I mean, just watching you manipulated that, like made that look so much cooler than a flat image on Instagram. Like I'd like to see some of that, like on Instagram, some more of like you just making it just do gnarly stuff. And it just makes me want to touch it and hold it and play with it.
Oh, that wreath with all the claw hands coming out. Yeah. One's that one's super gnarly.
Glow in the dark too, because it adds like this whole extra special element that maybe the person that bought it or the person that invests in that doesn't know is there. And so they have this house and then like they turn off the light and all of a sudden
surprise.
But yeah.
Right on. So one of the things we didn't really touch on that you mentioned on your website and that I already knew about you is that you deal with color blindness. And how has that like kind of played into some of the artwork that you've done over the years? I mean, it kind of makes sense to me looking at the wire artwork because it's something so like there's something so visceral about it that it doesn't require color, you know, and it's like that's kind of what gives it some of its charm there. Like, how would you say that color or the lack of color in some instances has influenced your artwork?
Yeah. I don't see in black and white. I can tell that the panel thing behind you guys has something going on. Like, I want to say it's either blue or purple or something, and then you got another square. I don't know. Like, don't ask. Don't rip off all the labels off a bunch of crayons and throw them on the ground and expect them to pick up the one you want. I don't see in black and white, but a lot of the color wheel just kind of blurs together for me. Okay. So like I am moderate to strong protan, which is like a form of red and green color blindness. We also have a little bit of blue and yellow color blindness. So basically it means fuck purple. I don't say purple. Purple is blue in here, but what I associate as blue and what I associate as purple, very, very similar. When I first moved to Eugene in 2000, 2004, I got a job at Regal Cinemas at a theater here or theater there in town. The theater itself doesn't no longer exist. It got bulldozed and they replaced with a big multiplex. But what was cool about that theater, it was just a little eightplex, but they had these big, huge windows in the front. Like it was across the street from the Valley River Mall. And the windows were probably about 40 feet tall, just huge, huge areas of window. And they were like, hey, you like doing artwork? That's cool. You want to do some promo stuff? I'm like, hell yeah, I want to do some promo stuff. So I got tempera paint and I would paint these 25-foot murals for upcoming releases. And I get paid for it because I was on the clock. And so that was cool. But I would paint backwards and then I would paint forwards. And I remember I did once when Corpse Bride was coming along. I did this huge, like 35-foot long mural for the Corpse Bride. And like their one huge, like 16-by-16-foot section was like Vincent and the bride standing holding hands, like looking at each other awkwardly, like in front of like the moon. And then just to the left of them, there was like this big flowing hill that was like a winding graveyard. And I made little tombstones for like all the employees of the movie theater and gave everyone like little epitaphs and stuff like that on them. And I remember, and I did this big, huge, swirly kind of Tim Burton-esque sky. And I did all of this and I put weeks of effort into it. Like at least, well, probably like a month and a half of me building this up because I had to paint it backwards. And then I had to paint it forwards so that you could see it from the inside. And so the outside would always look kind of graphic, but the inside would be like more of a traditional painting. But I remember right toward the fucking end, I was kind of putting the final touches on the sky and someone comes up to me and is like, oh man, it's like so cool how you used like purple for like all the sky. It's not something you see all the time. And I'm like, what? I wasn't looking at the labels. I wasn't looking at the names. I was like, oh, that's a cool color for sky and just mixing it together. And since then, I definitely look at the labels more.
Hey, I like a good purple sky myself. Like, I'm into it.
Gorgeous.
I can't tell you what it's like to paint colored pine. I just wing it.
Yeah. What did you mean backwards to forwards when you were saying how you were painting it backwards to forwards?
Okay, so like when you're painting on a window, if you're doing a traditional kind of window painting, you don't want to paint on the outside because then that level of paint is exposed to the elements, right? And so you need to paint backwards because you are bringing in all of the highlights and then you're adding layers of paint over the top of them so that you can have those highlights still be on top, like the top layer, kind of like building level or layers in Photoshop. Mm. Whatever is on the top going to be that highlight and then you're going to branch out from there and bring in your gradations and your shades. So the last layer will be your darks or whatever else in the particular area. So it's like you have to think through it backwards. And then in that case, you paint it backwards and then you do a flat coat and then you're able to treat it like a normal painting again and then just build on layers and paint over it.
That sounds really hard.
It's wizardry.
Oh, whatever, man. It was silly. But like, what's funny about it, what's weirdly wizardry is like when it's all over, it's like the movie's left the theater. So like, okay, just spray it with a bunch of Windex and then get like a squeegee and just get all this. Like, you ever seen like Hook? Like how they have like the paint that they hold at the end? They're like in the fight. But it's chunks of like your painting in your hands as you're just cutting it out. So. I don't know. Maybe I got used to like seeing my artwork just get ripped away there. That made me feel okay about carving pumpkins, reinforced, rotting, temporary
back,
art.
Back to the mandala effect.
I'm actually seeing a parallel here, interestingly, of doing the pumpkin. Maybe I'm interpreting this correctly or not. I'm not sure, but doing the pumpkins where the more recessed you get into the pumpkin, the more light you get. So the more highlights you get. So when you're doing a painting backwards like that, you're starting with the highlights, aren't you? In those cases, and you're working backwards into the dark. So there's kind of a bit of a parallel there, how you're starting with the, well, I don't know. Actually, that was one of my questions with the way that you shade your pumpkins is, man, I just like it all just seems like magic to me. but do you start with like the lightest points of the pumpkin and kind of work in the different shades or how does that work with a Dremel?
I am in the process of trying to figure out something that works. It seems like every pumpkin I throw myself into, it's just me playing and experimenting and seeing what works, what doesn't work. Like I just carved, you kind of see it like in the background over here, in your photo. And like, it's on my recent Instagram post. It's Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows. I was meticulous about getting all of his gradations at this face. And then I'm like, oh, I'll do the background. I'm like, and I just went deep into the pumpkin with a Dremel and like brought out, and now it looks like the background's on fire, but it fits. It's fine. Maybe I don't think I'll do that again. Maybe I will. I don't know. We'll see.
But looks great, especially from back
I've been carving all of these guys on Twitch lately and live streaming my whole process and everything, and just trying to get better at it. But yeah, more to answer your question, carving with a Dremel or carving with a knife on a pumpkin with a light inside of it is painting with light. The deeper you go, the more light you bring out. But kind of like with scratch board, I mean, not so much a scratch board, kind of the same effect. You can't erase. Like with a painting, like if you don't like the way that you threw down light in a certain way, you can just throw some black over or some darker tones or mute it out in other ways. But with the light coming through an object, you can't tone that down without adding more material on top of that. So what I've been trying to train myself to do is not go fucking hog wild and bring out all those deeper lights at first, because I want to, like, my idea in my head, if I can get in by through my stencil and get like where I think the detail should be, once I can pull off my stencil, then I have like the whole pumpkin there. I can kind of like start evening everything out and bringing out the design. And if I need to go deeper and deeper and deeper, I can. But I can't make things darker. So you got to respect the light, I guess. You can't just dig in unless you want the whole thing to be digging. If you go really deep on one point, it better be the brightest part of the picture, because what else are you going to do? And so, I don't know. I think one thing that it's fueled me as far as an artist goes with portraiture was an experience I had in college with one of my I had a lot of great art teachers through high school and in early college. But one of them that stands out, his name's Carl Siebold. I'm not sure if he's even around anymore, but he taught me how to airbrush. And so I learned how to airbrush, and I learned how to freehand airbrush with him, like learning his principles and techniques of just portraiture and stuff like that. And what he taught me was like the most important thing about doing a portrait was the eyes. Like if you can get like eyes that look at you and like grab your attention, everything else just slips away. You can have like a flipped up mouth, your nose can be off to the side, your eyebrows can be crazy. But it's like, because when you look at someone, you instantly look in the face, or and you instantly look into their eyes. It's just something that we do as humans. And so when you look at a picture of somebody, you can make eye contact with them. That's the first thing you're going to do in a painting. And then your eyes will drift around, and they'll look at like your chin, your cheeks, and everything else. But they'll always come back to the part that they identify with the most, and that's the eyes. So start with my eyes, and if I can get those to look decent, then I can kind of branch out and go from there. But I start there and then spiral back, I guess.
And if you fuck them up, throw it against the wall.
Like abstraction as you get toward the edges, but then gets like a focus of like being realistic toward the middle.
Man, well, since we're back on pumpkins, I did want to ask any hopes of carving like a record breaking sized pumpkin? You ever going to do anything that weighs 1,000 pounds plus?
God, maybe. I have an offer this year of like a really cool guy I know named Aaron. They just bought a house here in Portland, and I guess they're growing a pumpkin patch, and they're growing one of those gigantic pumpkins. So I might be able to carve one of those, but when you see that sentence, that's an area of pumpkin carving that I have not yet dipped my toes into, is like the sculptural carving. Because for me, it's like really, really, really like that light. It just comes out, and it's so magical to see like a traditional jack-o'-lantern. Well, not really traditional anymore, the way I fucking do them, but with that light, just they're so cool that you can make that the depths mimic that light coming out of, I don't know, I'm just not even using words anymore to describe it, but the way it makes me feel with a jumbled bunch of words. But I have not learned how to do like surface carving to make things look like skulls or faces and stuff like that. And that's what I traditionally see out of like really famous pumpkin carvers or like people that carve on those big pumpkins. Like no one's doing a big shaded jack-o'-lantern. Like for me, I look at that and it's like, okay, I could spend weeks on that and like come up with this big, huge like mural of a pumpkin work. Put on it like that, it's organic. It's gonna, how long is it going to hold up for the time it takes me to put that on there versus the time it takes to show it to people to validate its existence? I mean, I could take photographs of it, but, and that's arbitrary, I guess, because it's like, as if you have it up for the moment, it makes people feel good, makes them feel memorable. They can connect to Halloween. You can have those Halloween vibes. And I mean, all of that's kind of in question right now. That's why I've been streaming so hard lately.
Yeah.
But I do want to learn how to do that eventually. I might as well.
It should be fun, right?
Yeah.
Or the worst thing ever. It's just such a giant pumpkin, right? Like,
mm-hmm. A lot of delicious pumpkin seeds.
Nice. Maybe,
or not.
Got to use every part of the pumpkin.
That's right. Got to use the whole horse.
Just being responsible. You mentioned earlier, you were talking about how Roseanne kind of inspired some of your desire to get into pumpkin carving. And okay. I know those Halloween episodes as a kid shaped a huge amount of my personality. I can only assume that you're right there with me.
Oh man, like Roseanne, it's funny because I kind of like think of my personality as being like a conglomerate of like three movies that my family picked up from McDonald's during like this random like promotional period they were having, where it's like, if you got like, because I was a fat kid when I was little and I was
respect
McDonald's, great, and I get like a big old meal, and then they would give me a VHS movie to go along with it. And they had this time period where they were giving away a handful of movies. And so I got Addams Family, they got Wayne's World, Ace Ventura. And I watched all the fucking movies nonstop, and it's formed my identity as a humor.
I'm down with that.
I also spent a lot of time at home alone as a kid watching those movies, making weird shit. So I guess I reinforced it on my own.
Nice. Well, they've manifested themselves into a pretty impressive adult, I would say.
Nothing.
It's also nice. I one thing that I mentioned to Ryan when we were kind of digging through some of your online portfolio, I found it pretty remarkable how joyful you came across as an artist, despite the. Some like with, especially with the wire stuff, right? Like just how creepy some of that stuff really is, and you know, totally. Horns and bones and little baby. Those are my favorite. The little tiny bird skeletons. Oh my God. The best. I fucking love those little baby bird skeletons. But, it struck me how joyful you seemed, kind of through your art, despite the, you know, the subject matter as it were.
Oh no, I get it, man. Thank you. It's a funny thing because I've gotten myself into like this really niche hole of like these two dark things, but like, and I love spooky shit, but I'm also like a ham, and I jokes constantly, and just I'm very absurd like all the time, and I have the worst humor. That's why I'm trying this fucking Twitch thing, man. Just trying to put me with my artwork until I can find a way that like my artwork can invoke the silliness that I am, and I can find that thing to do. Like, I don't think I'm there yet. Maybe I am, and I'm just self-doubting it, but I'm not going to stop doing it, and I'm going to keep being weird. And so
that's just where I'm at.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's great. You shouldn't realize just how well you're pulling it off, because you definitely are. So just definitely keep doing it.
I listen to this podcast called The Dark Art Society. It's put on by Chet Czar.
Oh yeah,
he's wonderful.
Love him.
And I'm a member of their whole situation, but it's a funny thing that he keeps bringing up through and through is that, you know, dark art society looks at it as like this really, really scary thing that maybe isn't very approachable. But really, everyone that I've ever fucking met who does dark art is like laughs and has a great old time and has absurd humor. And man, it's just so endearing. And it's, oh, it makes my heart happy knowing that I'm not the only one. I mean, it attracts great people together. It's, I mean, that's how I've had a history of working with Jessica and then meeting you and now meeting you.
Pleasure.
So Twitch, I feel like an old fogey here, but I thought Twitch was only for games. Are you getting on there and you're just doing artwork and sharing your process with people? That's awesome, man. I didn't know people were doing that.
I feel oddly ignorant about it too, because like I'm just jumping in there, doing my own thing, knowing that I have a weird niche, that I'm not trying to compete with anyone, that I'm just bringing my own spooky fucking vibe into this environment. So I feel weird because like it's like going to another country and then not speaking the language but still being you. And so I don't know all the Twitch etiquette yet, and I'm still learning how to be a streamer. But in the end, I don't know if streaming is exactly what I want, but it's like the only thing I can think of right now. Well, two things. One, it's like the one thing that can combine the spooky shit that I do with me as a person, to know that like, hey, I'm not a serial killer all the time. Or I'm not like, just like, I don't need to be locked in the same sound to make spooky stuff. No, I just want to bring some of my personality into my work and attach that as myself to an association with my work. And that's something that I learned is a very valuable thing from doing conventions, because I never had that step up before where like, there's a hell of a thing. I can maybe come from my customer service background in retail where I can talk to people and I'm not afraid to do that, even though I'm a horrible introvert as much as I want. I get in there and I'm just a ham and I'm making spooky stuff and I'm stabbing faces and razor blades when I'm doing stuff on Twitch. And I did it pretty consistently a couple of years ago. And then I shifted focus. I finished my season of hard work, and because I was streaming my wire sculpture stuff and the whole creation of that into the expo for the actually, this is 2017. So that was all that time period leading up until when I did that show with Jessica in the for the Seattle Tattoo Expo. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I carried that through all the way to Halloween, carving pumpkins. And then after that, I just kind of let it go. And then with COVID coming around this year, and I mean, I moved to Portland, in the Portland area, to be part of a bigger art community and to support my girlfriend who's, you know, becoming a doctor and or a naturopath. And everything shut fuck down as soon as they got here. And the whole world is shut down. We're all in this place. We're all trapped. And now it seems like because people can't wear masks just because they're dicks or because they don't believe in them, that's fine. Do what you want. I don't care. But like Halloween seems very realistically like it's not going to happen. So I feel that if I could just like throw myself back into Twitch, throw myself back into streaming, this is something I can't control. I had gone from a cycle where I had been working like a full-time job the entire time I had been doing all of those expos, and then using all of my PTO time to take off time only to sell my artwork at these expos where I'd work all weekend. So I wasn't even giving myself any downtime anymore. And that is pretty straining. And then to put myself through a move to get up here, like COVID hit and I found myself, you know, in one space, like having a great job. The job that I got up here in Portland doing IT work, I'm working from home most of the week now. And like they dig me, and it seems like I found a good spot to be in. So as far as supporting myself goes on a basic level, I'm set. That's great. Like I got those emotional, I got those physical needs taken care of. But like this entire world and focus and expectation that I've built up for myself it's gone. All of it is on hold with COVID. Like all of, like I was on a set schedule. Like you can kind of, I don't even see behind me, but I live a life of whiteboards and checklists and notes, and I put them up everywhere so that like, I don't have to keep everything in here. I can just put it up somewhere else, like a beautiful mind sort of thing. And then just like, get it out of my head. I'm always looking at it if it's around, and then I can give it myself a to-do list to stay focused, to stay motivated and do those things. And, I was in that production path for so many years of like doing expo season, getting ready for pumpkin season, doing expo season, getting ready for pumpkin season. And then COVID hit, shut everything down. I had actually invested heavily into this year's expo scene. I had redone my whole booth. I had added wallpaper and molding, and I redid all of my labels, and I had this whole new look and feel to my whole booth experience that I took all of the profits I've made from my previous years of artwork selling just to reinvest in myself for it. And it's all ready to go. And it's all like right there against the wall, like just waiting. Like, like COVID shut down in March, the weekends that I was ready to go to Evergreen for the fourth year in a row.
Oh, damn.
And so like I had everything packed up ready for the expo. Expo got canceled. What do I do? And so I took time off, and I let myself relax. I got back into playing video games, enjoying really, really terrible, shitty games. I call it sevens. That game is awful, but I can't stop playing. But, yeah, now, but doing all of that made me feel complacent and made me feel stuck, and it made me feel like I had nothing in my goddamn control. And so getting back into Twitch and knowing people that I care deeply about it are also in a Twitch, like my good friend Guy, who I moved away from when I moved up here. He's heavily involved in Twitch now, and he's hilarious. He's just the coolest guy. He's this big mountain guy, and he plays video games, and he's really funny. And he just made an affiliate in Twitch, which is, means you reach a certain milestone, and then you can start getting subscribers and start creating income from it, as I understand it. I don't know all the things yet, but I'm not there yet. But I've been reading more up on it, and I've been trying to make myself more official on there and not so amateur-y. Because I started a couple of years ago, it's a great boon that I have all this telecommunicating equipment now instead of trying to acquire it right now in a time of COVID where, I mean, I bought two of these Logitech cameras that I used for streaming back then for $50 each, and the same cameras right now are going for $300.
Ouch.
Just, everyone's working from home, and they want to improve their setups. And so I luckily had all the stuff on me, so I have equipment. I might as well use it and do the one thing that makes me creative again. So I have been consistently on Tuesdays and Thursdays. My schedule is every Tuesday and most Thursdays, but I haven't missed a Thursday yet. Gives me a little bit of the ability to back off an extra day if I want to. But I have produced more artwork. Like just like all of these pumpkins kind of in the background of this video, I've done six now and I'm on my seventh. All of these have come out of like the last month of streaming on Twitch.
Nice.
And what's amazing about it is that people are starting to notice and invest in me. Like just today, I was able to secure a really, really heavy commission of like multiple very large pumpkins that's gonna gonna help a lot to equalize my loss in income from previous years of artwork. But it, I don't know, man, it's cool. People seem to dig it. I don't know if I'm actually accumulating any kind of following on Twitch, but what I treat Twitch as is just another platform that people who know me from other places like, hey, this is another place where you can see me at. And do the thing.
Realistically speaking, though, I don't think the timing could be better. I mean, I know that you're going there almost out of necessity, you know, to have that additional outlet. But I think that it serves a much bigger purpose, given just kind of the societal timing of everything, right? Because it seems like my kids are going to miss out on Halloween this year, right? And all, you know, my wife and I can do is just try and give them the best at-home experience that we possibly can. But there are a lot of people who, you know, maybe they're a little too old for trick or treating, but a little too young to go out to a club or you know, get real wasted or whatever grown folks do for Halloween. But they need something, and having the ability to come to a channel like yours where you're in real time actively creating art that is, you know, very, very of the you know, the season, we'll say. I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a lot of catharsis for people there. There's going to be a potentially even some healing. You might heal people with your art just by sharing it on your Twitch stream, Joey. I realize that sounds a bit, you know, grandiose, right? But I think that potential exists and it's very real.
I'm going to be spooky and I'm going to celebrate Halloween regardless, but I get a sense of joy out of sharing Halloween. That sounds so weird and silly, but like, you gotta understand, like before COVID and when I had a porch and just like the ability to like know that every year, no matter what gallery cared about me or who would want me in an art show, I'll have my own fucking art show. And I'm going to make the best goddamn pumpkins I can. I'm going to put them out on the porch and I'm going to give candy away to a bunch of kids that love Halloween and their family loves Halloween. It's going to be a big spooky night. And to build a following from a porch is such a fucking thing, man.
That's amazing.
It's so sad because no one really knows that I left Gene. So I don't know if, like, even if COVID wasn't happening, how many families would show up to that porch and not find one of the things at my old house I did was, you know, on a Nightmare Before Christmas, they have those fences with this spirally metal mounted. They have a jack lines mounted on it. When I was in college, I was a double major. I majored in video art and I majored in physical art. My physical art emphasis was in metal sculpture and welding. And so I made that fucking fence.
Nice.
Around my old house, I had this huge, like, spirally, like a rebar fence that was like really ornate, that was designed so that each post on it I could like mount a pumpkin on. And so I'd have like mounts approaching, and then as you walk up and then you come up and there's even more pumpkins and everything else I carved right behind it. And you know, that doesn't exist anymore down there for them, but like maybe I'll be able to start that somewhere up here in Portland once we have a proper place. It's where we stay. But that stuff's magical. Like back there on Friendly Street, there was a father who for the last four fucking years would come up and he would buy a beer at the next door over to my house and then drop it in my pumpkin pail to thank me for my pumpkins. I'm making money off carving these pumpkins just for the porch, but like, you know, thank you. That's fucking cool. I appreciate that. That validates that, like, what I'm doing, even if it's a small little token of appreciation, like just like here's a IPA, like you don't give out candy and have someone throw a beer in your pail every day.
Right. Your art matters, Joey. It seems to matter a great deal.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to share the Halloween vibe. Doesn't sound like it's gonna happen this year with everything that's going the way it is, but if I can spread some more vibes, I will. So
fuck yeah.
It seems like there's a consistent thread with all of the creatives and entrepreneurs that we've had on the show so far, and obviously part of it is timing, but everybody has been greatly impacted by the COVID-19 situation, and it's really interesting how it's making all these creatives kind of stop and turn inward and kind of reassess where they're at. Oh, yeah. And it's, I keep saying almost every episode, every situation is an opportunity. And I think you handled it beautifully, even by taking some time off just to get sick of taking time off. I did the same thing. Like, dude, I bought a PlayStation 4 and I was a fucking degenerate for about a whole month. Like literally, like I've been putting this off. What's that?
I can't see that from you. You're too motivated,
dude. I mean,
during the eclipse, where you're playing for Jessica, yep. and you're like, oh, we play live. I got to learn how to play the drums. And so he just taught himself how to play the drums to do a live. What the fuck? This is so cool.
That's my buddy.
Well, I've always had a little bit of experience in the drum kit. Like when when the drummer for my old band would go outside and smoke cigarettes, like on breaks and stuff, I would sit behind his kit and tinker around with it and stuff. So we got to a point where we're like, we need a drummer. I'm like, I'll buy a kit. I'll learn how to play it. And like a month or two later, we had a show, and it was at the Eclipse, and that was fucking magical. By the way, anybody listening, if you've never seen a what do they call it? The full eclipse. What's the other term for it?
Nope, can't help. Sorry.
What was that?
A total eclipse.
A total eclipse. There's another word for it, but yeah, a total eclipse. Man, if anybody ever has the opportunity to go see one of those, if you have to drive, go do it. Because I was making fun of it the weeks leading up to it. Everybody was hyping it up on Facebook. And I'm like, dude, the moon's going to be in front of the sun for a few seconds. It's not that fucking cool. But, dude, when it happened, it was just like there was something magical about it. It was just like.
Well, do you remember how cold it got?
Yes.
It's like it's summer. It's like 105 degrees, and all of a sudden it drops to below 40.
Yeah,
like, whoa. Because is gone. The thing that's providing all of this ridiculous heat to us during the summer is like boop, and it goes. This goes right behind there, and it just gets cold. It gets dark. It gets quiet, and it just becomes this like spiritual experience of what the fuck. I remember like just the way the shadows came through the trees. Like making all the tiny little eclipses, like on the wall. I don't know if you would call that.
Yeah, I do.
That whole thing I've never seen before.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know that was a thing. And I have a bunch of pictures in my phones from those little crescents everywhere. And apparently the people that get the partial eclipses, they get to see that too. But the total eclipse, just seeing that. And I can understand why they keep telling people to not look directly in the sun, because it is so fucking beautiful when it's
mesmerizing.
When it's completely covered like that, it's like. And yeah, that's what struck me too, is the temperature change and how quiet it got. Like all the birds stopped chirping. There were no animals moving around. It's like everything was like, what the fuck is happening? And one of the thoughts that I had was, man, what would it be like to be in like a tribe, you know, like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. And for something like that to happen and to have no concept of what is going on and seeing that. I'm sorry, you don't know Nukenta, but it's it definitely impacted me. That was definitely sure. a special moment.
I could see how that would be a pretty impactful circumstance. Being in an ancient tribe, though, I would just imagine everyone would simultaneously like shit their loincloths, right? Like, I mean, how do you not just what the fuck is going on right now?
What did we do wrong this time?
We're so sorry.
History, but like, didn't that actually happen with the Aztecs and like the Spanish came in? And they, because of their charting of the lunar calendar, they knew that was going to happen, and they were like, we'll make the sun go away if you don't do blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
Lunar eclipse, and everyone's like, ah! I think that, swear to God, it did. I could be completely wrong. But
sounds plausible.
No,
I'll believe it.
I heard that story before, too. I think Christopher Columbus had something to do with that, but I'm not totally sure.
Ah, fuck that guy.
Cunt.
Cunt.
Shit, now we need a double expletive tag on this one.
Yep. Forging Flame, fuck you.
Fuck you.
That's why on my Twitch channel I have like the parental content warning. It's because I have a mouth like a sailor.
Good.
I remember way back before we started recording, and Ryan and I were going through, you know, some of our rough guidelines for the show, and it was definitely a situation where we kind of mutually agreed we don't go out of our way to use profanity, but we certainly don't want to censor anyone. And meanwhile, we're just both over here like, fuck, fuck, fuckity, fuck, 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 fuck. Cocksucker.
I'm a vocabulary, but it just keeps coming down to those words.
Oh, well.
What are you going to do?
Words have power.
That's right. We're going to swing them around all over the place.
So I think you have a Twitch stream coming up right now. Is that correct? I do.
About 6 to 8 minutes from now, I should be on.
Oh, okay. Snap.
Okay, well, we'll start wrapping this up and let you go. Real quick, I just wanted to ask, first of all, what you got going on right now, what you're sharing with people on Twitch, just kind of out of my own curiosity, but also just let our listeners know where they can find out more about your artwork, where they can get in contact with you, obviously your Instagram, your website, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No problem. My name's Joey Edwards. I make weird and wonderful things. My website is edwardsartanddesign.com. You can go there, and I just treat it as my landing page. It's my full portfolio of all of the work that I've done. You can find my pumpkins on there. You can find my wire work. You can find my paintings, my mixed media work, stuff going back to high school, things that I'm proud of, different times I've been in the media, work I've done with, you know, that video that we did together for Jessica is on there, like, because I was credited as a video editor in the video section.
Yeah, that's awesome.
On there, and the color video I did on there as well. But yeah, that's like the main landing page. It's made by Squarespace, so you just have to scroll down a little bit from the homepage to get to the gallery buttons, and then in there you'll find just gallery after gallery after gallery of all my work. I do have an Instagram, and all of my social medias are Joey Edwards, but it's threes instead of a U, so J-O-3-Y-3-W-R-D-S. I'm wanting to rename stuff to make it more simple for people to follow, but I haven't come. And I've been carrying that moniker with the threes for like the last 20 years, and I already have it everywhere, and I'm struggling to find a better one. But when I want, maybe I'll do it. But for now, that's the way it is. So yeah, Instagram. On Facebook, Edwards Art and Design. But yeah, really, if you just go to the website, there's a link of branches, a branching set of links to go to everything. Or on Instagram, I have a link tree. That's what it is. That's the one you should go to.
Okay.
That'll take you where you want to go. But yeah, and then I stream on Twitch every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock PST. And I usually stream for a couple hours till 10, maybe 10:30 if necessary. Sometimes later. I mean, really, it's, I get into something, I'll go after it. I lose track of time and space. And then I'm going to continue to stream well after Halloween. I'm just going to keep pushing this out and see what happens with it. It's a new platform. I'm not there to be some kind of streaming person, but just to put me with my artwork in the context of who I am. I can't be there at a time of COVID. So just want to save Halloween, do the things.
Well, we're gonna share those streams and links with as many people as we possibly can. So hopefully we can help out there.
Thank you so much for thinking of me and having me on this. It really, really, really means a lot. So I deeply appreciate it to know that the weird fucking shit that I do is worth your time and attention. So thank you.
Definitely. Hell yeah. Definitely appreciate the work that you do. And it's just, it's mind blowing to me on so many different levels.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're definitely one of my favorite artists. So it's a pleasure knowing you, and it's been a pleasure having you on, and thank you for making the time to be here with us, man. It really means a lot to both of us, dude. This
absolutely.
Is great.
Yeah. Something come up where like things are actually gonna happen, I'll get a hold of you and maybe we'll do something else. So.
Cool.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
And likewise, if you ever got anything that you need to promote or anything going on and you want to jump on here again, man, just let us know.
We got you.
We got you.
Cool. Thank you so much.
We can just do another episode and just bullshit for another hour and a half and it'll be gold.
Great. Hell yeah. Right on, Joey. Great talking, right, man. Nice to meet you.
It was wonderful meeting you too. Thank you. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too, buddy. You have a good night. Enjoy your stream time, and get in the zone, and I don't know. Have fun. Yes.
We're going to go flog each other after this.
Okay. When you say that out of context, it's a little weird.
That's all right. Our listeners know what he means. Joey can exist in mystery. He's got to go.
I'll be commenting on that throughout my carb set. So.
All right.
Awesome. We'll let you go,
man.
That does
it.
Have a good night, man.
Good night, man. Thank you. Take it easy, guys.
Thanks.
Later. Bye.
Bye.